Hi, welcome everyone. This is the first episode of the FileMaker Fanatics podcast, and there's three of us on the phone right now, so let's go around. Let's have some introductions. Scott, would you tell us just what made you a FileMaker Fanatic?
Sure. Hello. This is Scott Rose of ScottWorld.com. I have been programming FileMaker databases since I was in college in 1992, so I've been doing it for 23 years, and I became a fanatic because I, you know, it started off where one of my friends, this is way before the internet took off, and one of my friends had his own band, and back then, if you wanted to keep in touch with your fans as a band guy, you had to, as a musician, that's what you call band guys, musicians. you actually had to create postcards, and mail them to your fans, you know, and literally put postage stamps on them. That was the way you kept in touch with your fans. And he came to me and he was like, oh my God, this is such a nightmare. I'm always handwriting these postcards, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, you know what? I heard about this program called FileMaker Pro. It lets you keep track of your you can keep track of all your fans. You can keep track of their mailing addresses. It'll print out labels. It'll even print out the postcards for you if you want. Only thing it won't do is print the postage on there for you. Of course, nowadays FileMaker can print postage with some plugins, but back then you couldn't do it. And he was so excited that he hired me to be the manager of his fan mailing list. And that's why I got started with FileMaker Pro, and that's why I got hooked on it.
Awesome. Awesome. So we also have with us Aaron. Aaron?
Hi. My name is Aaron Schacht, and I work with Scott at ScottWorld, ScottWorld.com. And I'm a newer developer. I'm a newer FileMaker developer. And I come from a background with about the same number of years, about 25, 30, maybe 40 years of database experience, going way back to the DOS days. So I'm newer to the Mac platform, maybe been on it for 6 years. Scott, is that right? Because you got me on the platform.
Oh, yeah, I got you on the platform. And yeah, I think that's about right. And you started with was Fox Pro your first language?
Yes, it was back then it was by Fox Software, but it was Fox Pro. And it was all DOS. And very much like you, it was just creating really simple contact databases or invoicing systems, accounting programs and such. So, but once Windows came out and became more popular, there was Fox Pro for Windows. And so I just have a very strong background in the Windows platform. Once Microsoft surprisingly abandoned Visual Fox Pro, which was a really good database development tool, I was forced to look for something else. And this is kind of in the midst of Scott getting me to change my whole thinking on PCs versus Macs. I got myself a Mac Mini with a PowerPC chip in it, and I started getting used to it, fell in love with the Mac. And I need to find a tool that I could develop databases on for both PCs and Macs, and really FileMaker was the natural selection for me. So now I'm having to port all of my Windows databases from Visual Fox Pro. It's a monumental task, as you can imagine, over to FileMaker, and it's just such a beautiful, relatively simple platform to be on.
Amazing.
Yeah, cool. It's incredible.
Amazing.
Welcome to the Macintosh platform.
And who are you? And who are you, our fair friend?
Thank you for asking. My name is Tony White. My company name is creatively named Tony White Designs. I was kind of in a rush to come up with a name. And so I started working with FileMaker. I'm a New Yorker, so sometimes I'm a fast talker, sometimes a slow talker. I'd been doing graphical design. I'd worked in the corporate world, and I started doing graphical design for nonprofits, environmental groups, and then there was a FileMaker project that came on stream, and I had a buddy who said, hey, FileMaker's really cool. So I jumped in at version 2.0, did a ton of work for a t-shirt company called Humanities, an environmental t-shirt company, and just kept going with it since version FileMaker 2.0. And then here we are. It really, really is amazing what you can do with FileMaker. It is a rapid application development tool, which means you can work with a lot of different clients, and that's something that I've enjoyed over the years. Because it's so fast, you know, you can – I used to think of it, I could do 5 different projects at once. This was back before internet. Now you can do 10 because you don't – you can just remote in. But it used to be you could go to 5 different places on 5 different days and build 5 different systems in 5 different industries because it was all so fast. You go in there one day a week and you just like, you know, automate chunks of their business, come back the next week and automate some more. And so the variety that the speed gives you, I really enjoy, you know, rather than working in one industry. I personally like to work in a lot of different industries.
It's nice to have that variety, isn't it? It's like it's so exciting to constantly have your hand in so many different industries.
Yeah, absolutely. You see a lot of different things about the world. So we decided to have this podcast, and we have a plan, and the plan is to make it up as we go along. and to, you know, to have fun. It's very informal. We're logistically on Skype. And we're all recording and, you know, we're going to edit. Who knows? We're going to try and make it sound decent on this first episode and better on the second episode.
And then the best on the third.
And then I think at that point we plateau.
Exactly.
And then coast. And yeah, we'll see. So we do have a first episode. What else do we want to tell people before we jump into our topic?
I'm just really excited that people from all over the world are going to be anxiously awaiting each new episode of this podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever, and they might wait a long time actually between episodes.
Logistically, you know, I don't know. I think, or technically, I think, I don't know. I think this is going to work out pretty well.
Now we are, one of the great podcasts out there is Joel Spolsky and Jeff Atwood did a podcast about the process of building Stack Overflow, which I think everyone knows is this web application for programmers. So they did a terrific podcast where they described from the very beginning how they built Stack Overflow, and it is very much a behind-the-scenes thing. Mm. And one of the things that they said in one of the episodes, they said in order to make the podcast episode's interesting, you know, people like it when people argue, but they didn't want to argue, so the best they could come up with is Joel would pretend not to listen. Because that somehow would cause engagement, you know.
So that's how they would avoid the arguments? If Joel wanted to argue, he would just ignore it? He'd pretend like he didn't hear it instead?
Yeah, and just to get the audience riled up, you know, instead of having a food fight, they would do that. So we're going to pretend a little bit here. From time to time, each of us is going to pretend not to understand the FileMaker topic that we're talking about. And we're going to do this purely for educational purposes. So it's like, oh, I didn't know that. That's really interesting. I'm glad I'm listening to the podcast. So if you hear us and it sounds like we understand what we're talking about, we're not pretending. But if you ever hear any of us and it sounds like, you know, we make a mistake about FileMaker, something we don't know, at that point, then we're pretending.
I love it. It's wonderful. It's wonderful, and it's true.
Of course.
Yeah, but Tony, is that only for the first podcast? Is this the only time the audience gets to know your strength?
No, that's pretty much the rule for the entire. Well, at least, you know, each of us individually. But you know, that's how I think people should interpret it. If I say something,
okay,
I love it.
You know, if I'm right, I'm right, and if I'm wrong, I was just kidding. So we do have a topic. We have our first topic is technical debt, and this is one that I threw onto the table because I used to work on Wall Street. Now these days that comes with a little bit of a disclaimer. I was there 9.5 years, and the last half of it, I was what's called a buy-side trader. I bought and sold stock on behalf of a portfolio for widows and orphans so that they could retire.
Wow.
Good guy.
See, was Wait, you were taking advantage of widows and orphans, or you were helping?
I think you missed in the morning. No, I would buy stocks so that widows and orphans could afford the porridge to put on their table. And I used to go to the marketplace where the big bad wolves were offering stock for sale or to purchase, and I would go and say, "Please, sir, may I buy some Nike?" so that my widows and orphans might afford shoes or whatnot. But anyway, all kidding aside, I did work on Wall Street and I was a buy side trader.
Oh, wow.
So I have been listening to podcasts and they frequently tackle the topic of technical debt.
What does that phrase mean, technical debt?
Why, Scott, I'm glad you asked me.
Right on cue.
Okay, so technical debt is a made-up phrase that was – this is the story that I heard on the internet, therefore it must be true, that a gentleman named Ward Cunningham, who invented the wiki – you know, so what else has he done? But anyway, he invented the wiki. He wow. coined the phrase technical debt. And the story that I heard is that he was working on a software project for a financial firm. And so he's working on the code, and the code's a mess. And he's trying to get something done, but he's like tripping over all this code that's, you know, this poorly named. It's... it wasn't FileMaker code, but you know, couldn't get anything done. It was just so confusing, the code. And he said to himself, oh, man, if I just had a little bit of time, not to add a new feature, but to kind of clean things up, I would be so much more productive. Mm-hmm. But then he had to go and he had to explain to the owners of the business, the financial owners, because it was a financial company, and he had to explain to them, I know you want features, 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 but I need to do some work behind the scenes. So we had, well, how am I going to explain this in a language that they're going to understand? Because they're going to be like, no, we want features. But so he said, well, I'm going to explain it using their language, and they understand debt. And so he said, I'll tell them that we have a lot of technical debt. So
a lot of debt that they need to pay down. They need to get out of debt before we can start building some all these new features.
Yeah. So here's some sample numbers here that I'm going to – I wrote them down here. Simple numbers. So imagine you borrow $100,000. And normally, let's just pretend that a normal interest rate is 10%. Right now, interest rates are a little bit crazy all over the place. But let's just say that a normal market interest rate is 10%. So Ward looks at his project and he says, you know what? It feels like I'm paying 50%. Because this is so messy, I spend half my time just trying to get my head around what's what. Mm-hmm. So I'm paying 50% interest. So everything I'm doing is just taking that much longer. And if I had time, I could get it to the point that I'm paying 10% interest, or I could pay down the debt and pay 0% interest and come out ahead.
Oh, nice. I love it. I love it. It makes perfect sense.
So they said no. No, I'm just kidding.
They said no? They said no?
No, actually, they said yes, of course.
Oh, that's hilarious. I
don't know what they said.
You know, that makes really good sense. That's a really great way to explain to clients, too. And they're like, well, wait, we just want you to add this one button. Why can't you just add this? You know, and you're like, well, you know, the programming code underneath the hood is really messy. But explaining it in the way of that there's debt to pay down, that's something that everyone can understand because people understand the concept of debt.
Yeah. Yeah, and it. So I've had this conversation with clients, and I've had clients who, I guess, is like a spectrum of clients. Some of them were like, "I get it," and I have to say, the conversation seems to work better if you find a balance between the features and the pay down of technical debt, especially with a new client.
Right. If you spend all your time paying down the technical debt, they're not seeing any results, really.
Yeah, and they may not know. So like a typical strategy that I think is a good one, not just from a programming point of view, but also from a psychological point of view. Say, new client works in the, walks in the door, right? And this is, I think, where you're often going to bump into technical debt, because I don't know about you, but my projects don't have any technical debt.
Right, exactly.
Well, all my code is perfect.
My code is so perfect, I bronze it. They put it in the Smithsonian.
Anyway, so, but I have a friend who wrote a pro. No, I have. So you have this project, right? You walk in the door and you look at it, and the client says, you know, something like, "We have this project and it's almost done," you know, which is not always true. And then you look at it and they say, "Okay, and we have some features," and they have a list, and you look and say, like, "Okay, I can actually," and they have 10 features. And I say, I can actually get some of these features done. And some of these features I really can't I can't do until I pay down some debt. Or if I do them, you know, I'll get them done, but it'll be horrendous. But if I can find some features that I can just do and put something up on the board, you know, like a sports analogy, put some points up on the board so I can say, hey, look, I can get some, you know, I can create value for your company.
Interesting. So that sounds great. So it's really like a nice little balance, really.
Yeah, I think if you once you put some stuff on the board, and like, you know, with FileMaker, and I do actually have a client that I did something. I did one calculation which I had in my code library that converted numbers to an amount that you would print on a check, and I dropped that in. And compared, and this is a very smart, talented client who was also doing FileMaker, which is always pretty impressive, right? They're like running their business in whatever business they're in, right? And then on the side, they're doing FileMaker development. So it's like, and they got started on a project, and that's great. You know, they're already getting value, but, you know, maybe, you know, it doesn't show like 20 years of experience.
Right.
So you go and you do something, and you generate some value. And then you kind of, I think you buy yourself some time, and you earn yourself some, you know, some karma or some trust or whatever. And then at that point, because you've already got a stream of revenue that they're benefiting from, they're already saving money, they're saving time. Mm-hmm. At that point, you earn yourself some chips that you can kind of reinvest. As long as you just, you know, mix it up, you reinvest, and you might say, hey, I'm going to do this. It's going to make things better. Or you might just, you know, take a few minutes here and there and slip some changes and pay down some debt as you go.
It's interesting. Yeah. You know, you bring up a really good point there. I'm just going to go back a few sentences, what you said there, if you don't mind. You brought up a really good point. One of the things about FileMaker Pro is that because it's such an incredibly easy programming language, relatively easy programming language compared to other programming languages, that a lot of people that are busy running their own businesses, they buy FileMaker Pro, they start programming their own system, or, you know, one of their employees says, oh, yeah, I could do this. This looks easy. And they start programming their own system. And then before they know it, they've got a system that's sort of working, but now they're over their head. Technically. And that's a lot of times where they call in people like us. We're professional FileMaker, certified FileMaker developers. And we come in, you know, any of us three, and we look at their system and we could see, yeah, you know what? Your system is sort of working actually. And there's actually a lot of it that is working. But then we go under the hood and that's when we see the technical debt and where we see like, oh, well, this relationship wasn't set up properly, or the relationship graph is really messy in this way, or yeah, you do have the projects file linked to the people's file, but watch what happens if you change the person's name. All of a sudden, they completely disappear from the projects.
Yep.
You know, we're the ones where we sort of notice the little holes, the little cracks in the walls, so to speak. And that's why I think we see a lot of technical debt in FileMaker solutions, where I don't think you really see it quite as much in other programming languages, because you take another language like Visual Fox Pro, and there is no way like the guy running the pet store is going to dive into Fox Pro on his own.
If you're familiar with healthcare.gov, FileMaker is easy, but it's harder than it looks.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say, Zach.
I still think those people who start come out ahead because they did something, because they began, because they they took a paper-based system. Like I'm actually thinking of a particular client who started, and he's better off now. I think that, like, just any way you get to FileMaker is good. But you are better off. I think the best time to bring in a consultant is at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And if you're lucky enough to know that you need one. Or if you're lucky enough to know that those consultants exist out there.
Yeah. And someone to kind of make sure that you're at least heading in the right direction. Like you're heading north instead of, you know, you're heading east instead of west.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes, you know, there's been a couple different times where, like, I've been brought in on a project, you know, or, you know, multiple, you know, tons of projects. And some of them, their systems are in such terrible, terrible, truly terrible shape that there's really no choice. You can't even pay down the technical debt. You have to restart by building from scratch if the company wants to grow, if the company wants to keep building. And then there's other times where they've been using a system for years. It's working great. There's no problems. They did a pretty clean job up front. And when we come in, the technical debt is very low. We don't need to pay down that much debt.
I guess you have two kinds of projects. The kind of projects that you can evolve. And that's kind of like a whole gigantic area of conversation about how do you – and I think FileMaker is very good at that. It gives you the ability to kind of I think the word is refactor. The word, at least in my head, is refactor. The idea of, like, you have code that's suboptimal in one way or another. And you make a small change and things don't break. And then you make another small change and things don't break. And by change, I mean you make it simpler, easier to read. Usually, in my opinion, readability is the big thing. Mm-hmm. Speed mm-hmm. doesn't really seem to be the – it's usually not the big issue. Every now and then it is. But to me – usually the big issue is, like, can you just read the code? You know, can you get anything done? So we have, there's a kind of a rule of thumb that I use that I think is interesting and kind of ties back to the technical debt aspect of it, is that on a big system, any code that's working, just generally we tend not to touch
mm-hmm.
because it's working, right? And the code that we're adding to or, you know, changing, that's when we'll add the new feature and pay down the different kinds of technical debt that you have in FileMaker. Because we're going to put that – if we're making a change to a script or a portion of the code, it means we're touching the code. It's going to go through a testing cycle where we're going to look at it, other people are going to look at it, we're going to tell everybody, hey, we made a change, you know, keep your eyes open in case something happens. That's the perfect time to pay down that debt, is like, we're going to add the feature and we're going to make the code more readable at the same time.
I love it. I love it. You know, I think readability is so huge. You know, if you look at any of our code, you know, Aaron's code, your code, Tony, or my code, readability is so prevalent in our code because, you know, when I'm programming a system, I want it to be so incredibly readable, like a novel, like a mystery novel with no mystery. I want it to be so readable that if everything's working in the system perfectly for the client for 10 years and they call me 10 years later to make a change or add a new feature, I want to be able to go back in my code and read it and know exactly what everything does and where I left off and just totally understand the whole system just by reading it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good because you might be the, you know, write – I mean, there's all these kind of expressions out there is like write your code like the next person's going to be an angry programmer with anger management issues who knows where you live or something like that. But if that's not enough to convince you, it could be you.
That's hilarious. Yeah, you know, and then a lot of other times, you know, the thing is that you know, FileMaker gives us so much capability to comment things. You know, there's not even really that many limitations on field naming. Like, you know, our field names can be really, really long. So it's like, I use that all to my advantage. I like use long field names. I type in a lot of comments. And then sometimes, you know, if there's something questionable in my code, I'll put in little comments. I'll be like, now this may seem odd, but the reason we programmed it this way was to work around a bug in FileMaker Pro 8.5 where this feature doesn't work. You know, and then I go back like years later and I look at this, I'm like, why did I do it this way? I'm like, oh, I did it this way because 8.5 had a problem exporting PDFs. But now, you know, you can look back and say, oh, okay, well now I can change that and make it more efficient, or okay, I see what the steps are. You know, it's just about like step by step by step, you just outline what you're doing. And it makes it so easy and clean. It makes it so much faster to build new features.
You know,
Scott,
Aaron.
I was just going to say, Scott, your code is so heavily commented. I could take one of your solutions and practically duplicate it just based on your comments. I could create it really is like it's a guide to creating a solution. It's incredible.
That is so nice of you. Thank you so much. You know, it doesn't take a lot of time to comment. You know, clients, you know, it's not like clients are paying a lot of money for me to comment. It's like literally you just type a couple sentences. Boom, you're done. You just commented a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, I think it's better. What do they say? The main expense of software is usually on the maintenance side. You know, it's like 20% of the cost is writing. I'm going to make up numbers here. It's probably wrong, but it's, I'm pretending. But it's like, you know, 20% is writing it and 80% during the lifetime of the software is maintaining it. So, you know, investing up front, assuming you have the time. Hey, one of the things that I think is interesting about technical debt is it's not all bad. I mean, just because you have technical debt doesn't mean you did anything wrong. Your example, Aaron, I mean, Scott, about the 8.5.
Oh, you know, yeah. Uh-huh.
If you build a feature or you build something in some version of FileMaker and then FileMaker comes out with new features like parameters.
Right.
Or parameters. I can't think of anything else. But you can then, there's actually a lot of examples. You can go back and you can take code that was perfect at the time. Maybe it was written in FileMaker 6 and you did what you did with the features you had. But that very same code, when you look at it in 11, has technical debt.
Right, exactly. It's so true. It's so true. You're right. We look back at our old solutions, and we're like, wait a second, why did they do this? It's because, oh, it's because there were 500 less features available to us back then.
Right. Why did you have 20, you know, if you had 26 find buttons on a layout that called 26 different scripts that, you know, find by some letter. And these days, that's technical debt because it's 26 scripts instead of one script taking 26 parameters. Yeah. But you're innocent, right?
You're innocent because you couldn't do it any other way back then.
Right.
Same thing with multiple files. You'd be like, why do I have so many files? Why are there 57 files with this solution? It's because, you know, we used to only be able to have one table per file.
Yeah, FileMaker 7, all of a sudden, it's started to open up a whole new world. So I don't think technical debt is, you know, sometimes technical debt is just the result of the software platform moving forward. It's still technical debt because when you look at that code base, you just think to yourself, well, I could refactor this code, you know, maybe throw a little bit of tools at it and you know, not be scrolling past 26 scripts. And that's just an example. I mean, you can multiply that out. You might have, you know, 500 scripts that suddenly collapse down to 10 scripts or, you know, depending.
Totally. Like, even like organizing your scripts and your layouts into folders, which was not available to us in the past.
Right.
It's just like something like that, grouping things together in folders, which is a relatively new feature in FileMaker. I don't know when that came in. Maybe FileMaker 7 or 8 or something.
Hold on. Let me...
do you know?
I have a little diagram coming out where we... let's see. When is this podcast coming out? We'll get the audio out. Shortly as this podcast is published, we're going to release our annual whiz-bang, lot of effort diagram, which is going to have all the FileMaker objects, all the FileMaker code objects, and when they came out, and how they touch each other.
Whoa! Have you come out with this before?
No, this is going to be released in April. Actually, I was talking to someone and about the productivity, and he's working a lot in 13. Mm-hmm. And he said he's seeing the most productivity through the use of styles. Because I think 13 is when the themes came to fruition.
Wait, well, they started in 12, and then they sort of embraced them more in 13?
Well, because they came out with the ability – so they had themes, right? But the ability to do your own custom style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to have the different object types and the ability to apply, you know, default styles and or, you know, other kinds of, you know, text fields with default style or some other kind of style for, you know, editable field, non-editable field, whatnot. I think when it hit 13, they kind of completed it, you know, or I wouldn't say 100% completed it, but they got it to the point that it's a big productivity help. And let's see, at the last DevCon, there was three really good presentations on themes. Two of them were FileMaker engineers, and one of them, Bob Shockey, did a really meticulous deep dive into themes, and he showed how he approached it. He had a style guide, I guess, or he had one file that was like a repository, mm-hmm. where he was defining all the object types, and then within each of the object types, well, actually, it was more like these are the different things that I use to build my interface, and all those things happen to fall into different categories like fields and buttons. And portals and tabs and sliders and whatnot. And for each of those, he would pick a theme and, you know, pick a bunch of visuals that were congruent. And he had that in a repo, and he'd just kind of lay it all out there and sort it all out. And I came back from DevCon, and I, you know, just basically followed his instructions, did what he did, and set up coded up a style guide, so to speak, or a repository of themes to match what we have traditionally used.
You know, I think that's what really the beauty of FileMaker Pro is. It gives us the ability to really reflect what anybody wants. Really, it gives us so much flexibility, I think is what I'm trying to say.
It gives you speed. It gives you, you know, when I think of. Actually, I would say a couple things. So what is FileMaker's advantages? One, I keep coming back to the rapid application development, but that's not the only big thing. I think one of the other big things that deserves mention is the fact that it plays nice with other software things. So, for instance, if you have a client, maybe, and a, you know, someone in mind here, you build something for the work group, and then you look around and you see, you know, quote unquote, big iron, these giant systems that aren't going anywhere. But FileMaker's like, fine, we'll play nice with them. We've got ESS. So there might be some website, Magento, or, you know, whatever. And FileMaker will play nice. So there might be a bunch of desktop apps doing desktop publishing, maybe catalog production, whatnot. So FileMaker says, fine, we'll do some Apple script. Or there might be some web apps like, you know, Ruby on Rails. So I think that's one of the other strengths about FileMaker. You can get in there. You can fill some gaps that the other systems aren't getting to because they're kind of, you know, moving a little bit more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just say, like, oh, you need some reporting? I'll run some ESS against your thing. I'll bring down the data, and I'll get you 20 reports, you know, before you're blinking.
It's so true. It's so true. You know, one of my big success story clients is Keslo Camera, one of Hollywood's largest.
Yeah, up on the FileMaker, people can Google Keslo FileMaker success or something. You know, that should get you there because you got noticed on the FileMaker website.
That's true. Thank you so much. Yeah, if you do Keslo FileMaker success, you'll see it'll come right up. They're one of my huge success stories. They're probably the largest, if not the second largest, camera rental company in Hollywood. Huge company. And all the other.
Is there much going on with the film in Hollywood?
You know, it's just a small little industry. I don't know if you've heard of it, the entertainment industry. Very tiny industry.
I know they do a lot in, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, huge. You know, they deal with so many major motion pictures, major television shows, and it's a fast-paced, intense industry where people need things immediately. And all the camera rental houses have sort of standardized on this one product that's for Windows. And, you know, it's just a commercially available camera rental solution. But because it's this big, old system that all these companies are using, it takes a long time for new changes to come out.
Yep.
You know, no one can get a change specifically just for their needs. You know, they got to wait till the next version comes out and hope that the features they need are included in it. And you just can't call them and say, hey, can you make this change? No, it's like, you know, when you buy QuickBooks or Quicken, you know, you can't call up Intuit and say, hey, can you add this one feature for me?
Yeah, you don't really control your destiny at that point.
Exactly. You don't control your destiny. And Kessel Camera went the other way. They decided to go with the FileMaker solution developed by me. And because of the rapid application development and because we can make so many changes so quickly and add on so many features so fast, Kessel Camera started growing by leaps and bounds. They weren't always the largest camera rental business in Hollywood. They started off as the smallest. You know, they were the new guy,
wow,
you know, 15 years ago or whenever. And, but this system catapulted them to the top of the heap. I mean, they've got, I don't even know, maybe 40 iPads now that are like running the show there, and they're scanning in and out equipment with portable barcode scanners that are communicating to iPhones and iPads.
Wow.
And they've got, you know, clients are coming in and signing for things with their fingers on the iPads, and everything's communicating in real time. And they're adding, they have a huge touchscreen in the back just for the service department, all powered by FileMaker Pro, where they're repairing things and keeping track of the repairs just on this huge touchscreen. And it's like this scrolling ticker. It's
What kind of touchscreen is it? Is it not an iPad? It's some other kind of touchscreen?
It's a huge, gigantic, like, yeah, I don't know what company makes the touchscreen.
Like it's literally bolted to the wall kind of thing?
Yeah, it's bolted to the wall, and there's a Mac Mini powered to it. So it's like a monitor.
Nice.
It's like a huge, like 50-inch or 70-inch monitor, flat screen monitor. Cost them several thousand dollars, but the Mac Mini is running FileMaker on it, but they're all controlling it from the touchscreen. And it's almost like when you go into Taco Bell and they're like making the dishes, and you know, the people are touchscreening, you know, okay, tostada, you know, two Diet Coke, boom, 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 all touchscreen. They're in the back in the service department, and they're just clicking, okay, done, boom, 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 do this, 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 and they can see everything. And
right,
it's like,
because it's all shared data, centralized.
All shared data. It's all FileMaker. We could customize FileMaker for their needs. And these other companies, they're falling behind Kessel because they've got a system.
They can't give the same service.
They can't get the same service. And then other company, you know, is not going to add a feature into their system to have a touch screen because, like, how many of their clients are going to install touch screens in their place? It's just like, you know, you get the rapid application development and customizability of FileMaker, and the sky's the limit.
And, you know, you bring up another of the key points, I think, about FileMaker. To take a basketball analogy, it's like a triple threat in that it's desktop, mobile, and web. It's a single development environment, a single developer skill set can conceivably build in a single development environment and deploy to the desktop, to mobile, and, you know, to the web in a variety of different ways. And it sounds like you're definitely, I mean, you didn't mention the desktop specifically, but obviously you've got desktops involved.
Yep.
And you've got mobile, and you're on two of the different form factors, two of the three, right? You've got the iPad. Well, I guess it's more than the iPad Mini, but you got the iPads, and you're running on phones as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
And then, you know, maybe you're doing something on the web, maybe not, but it sounds like you're kind of working the platform there.
Absolutely, and you're right. You're right. What other platform enables you to do that? Like with one set of programming tools.
and silence ensues.
Crickets. Can you edit in crickets there, Tony?
We are planning a podcast. The new to the what's it, new to the platform, used to program in some other language. Now, you know, one of the things that I think is true is that it takes about 3 years, a minimum of 3 years, to be a good FileMaker programmer, just because it's so vast.
Minimum.
Right. And just, you know, you could be, I don't know, Albert Einstein. And then I think it takes, you know, it takes like 10 years to be really, really good, at least, because there's just so many nooks and crannies.
So much. You know, I almost think it was easier to start off back. I mean, it was clearly easier to start back at the FileMaker 2 days because there was only 6 features. But but the funny thing is, it's easier to keep up with the new change than it is to be thrown in for the first time because there's so much.
There is. It's could be overwhelming. I'm looking at my notes here on Technical Debt just to see if there's anything else that we should throw down some sound on that we can edit in later. We talked about, I mean, probably covered it pretty good, but let's see. We talked about, you have technical debt because the versions move forward. You know, one of the other things that's true about technical debt is you can write like a bunch of code just to show a client just for the purpose of a conversation. And you might do like 2 or 3 versions of something just so you have something to talk about, and then they go with one, and then you have to go back at some point and rip out the other two. I think that's legitimate technical debt too, because you accomplished a goal. You needed to have a conversation. It's really hard to talk about, like, you know, making hand puppets in the sky. So you write some code, say like, well, this way or that way, and they say go with this way, and also do this and this and this, and then, you know, you're like, then you come back when there's a little time to kind of like run an analytical tool and do like a garbage collection round.
Tony?
Yes, sir.
Is it possible to get to a technical surplus?
That's a great question. That is a great question.
I've been thinking that the whole time when we're talking about technical debt. I'm thinking about President Clinton and a surplus. Is that possible? How do you get to a technical surplus from a debt?
Well, I think one way that's kind of interesting, one point of view on this is the other side of technical debt. Like if I borrow $100,000 from you, and on the one hand, I'm paying you 10% interest, and you might be like, oh, this is great, I'm making 10% interest. On the other hand, so to me, it's a debt. To you, it's an asset. And it's maybe sort of an interesting way to look at it is that, but I do think it's possible to kind of overdo to get to the point where time spent, you know, fiddling with your naming convention, let's say, is generating less return than the new features would be. So I do think you can, like, in other words, if you borrow $100,000 and instead of 10% interest, you're paying a tenth of a percent, you know, at that point, don't pay the technical debt. You know, go out and invest in the business, you know, rather than paying down that $100,000, invest the $100,000 and buy more cameras, let's say, and rent the cameras, because, you know, every time you buy a camera, you rent it. Maybe you're making, you know, 9% by buying cameras and renting them. So borrow it, and maybe a tenth of percent isn't necessary. Just say you're borrowing money at 1%. That's pretty darn low. So borrow money at 1%, reinvest it at 9% buying cameras. And but, you know, that's just the other side. I think there's some equilibrium point. if you're paying 50%, pay that down. But if you're paying 1% and you've got alternative investment opportunity, go with that.
That's a great way of looking at it. That's a really great way of looking at it. You know, it's funny. That reminds me of something that I think it was Bob Shockey that said once. We've been talking a lot about Bob. This podcast.
That's 2 shout-outs for Bob. Bob will be picking up our product placement.
He'll be paying for the product placement this episode. Bob, the bill is in the mail.
Our unofficial sponsor of tonight's podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Bob said, and I believe it was him, I might be attributing this to the wrong person, he said, it doesn't make a difference what system you have as long as you have a system. So you were talking about naming conventions. You know, it's like, it doesn't make a difference what naming convention system you follow, as long as you got your naming convention and you stick with it in your system and it's consistent and it's uniform. You know, it doesn't make a difference how you group your scripts into folders, as long as you've got a system for how you're grouping them into folders.
So this is one of those examples where...
Or maybe that
where...
was Jerry.
What's that?
What was that, Aaron?
Maybe that was Jerry Robin who said that.
You know, I did not go to Jerry Robin's session, so I think it was Bob. And I think Jerry's hilarious. I love Jerry Robin. He's like Jerry Seinfeld meets Robin Williams.
It's better to have a convention than no convention.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's true. In other words, having a naming convention is way better than having no naming convention.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. But now, yeah, I think having a good naming convention is better than having a mediocre naming convention. All right, who wants to take the contrary position on that? I'm going to say a good naming convention better than a mediocre naming convention.
That's actually true. And you know what? The great news is that the three of us on this call, we've all come up with the world's best naming conventions.
I guess it must be the same then.
Exactly.
Well, Scott, I've adopted your naming conventions. That's my only choice because
you work for Scott World.
That's correct. So I'm not going to deviate from your naming conventions. I want a job.
He wants a job.
And it's not called World for nothing.
Right.
Exactly.
No, I think that and you know that's a whole very interesting separate podcast that you know we should draw a circle around and talk about in the future is you know the dynamics and the kind of the best practices of you know basically team programming and also sometimes pair programming with a client and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think some of the best clients are ones that really truly understand that sometimes it's really best for them to get out of the programming code themselves and let a professional developer take over.
Yeah. And there's some interesting dynamics about that. It's a longer conversation. I happen to be very, I actually like it when I'm pretty sure not everyone, you know, thinks the same way, but I happen to like it when I'm working with a client and we're screen sharing and they're there to kind of, you know, tell me the business logic and I can work really fast when I have someone on the phone and I say, listen, what are you trying to do here? Right. And they're like trying to do this. Okay, great. And I say, all right, let's go. Da, 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 da. Hey, there's two ways. We can go this way or that way. What do you think? And then I'll get an answer on the spot. And then I think there's some nice opportunities there. You know, hopefully if I'm good at what I'm doing, they'll notice is like, wow, you're like, you've done this before. You're faster than me. Maybe I should let you do this. Right. And I should, mm-hmm. you know, do what I do, which is rent camera equipment or, you know, buy camera equipment or buy it and then rent it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, that is always nice when the client's watching you make the changes and they can really see how deep and intricate FileMaker gets.
Yeah, and they might say, and they might, you know, check in from time to time and then, you know, it goes back to what we said earlier, you might establish some trust. It's like, you know, one of my favorite moments where I'll do something and, you know, I'm in a nice groove and they're looking over my shoulder and I'm doing something and it's like click, 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 click. You know, and all the clicks are good, and something positive happens, and, you know, I'm clicking one dialogue, and I know where the button's going to be on the next screen, and, I know, you know, I've got the mouse already positioned when the screen repaints, I'm going to click the next one, and I'd imagine like anyone else, it's like you look at that, you know, you look at someone who's done something for a long time, it's like, wow, that's... you've done this for a while, and then you get trust. And then they'll say, you know, they'll do what they do. And then you make a better team. I think you get a better return on investment that way. But at the same time, I think it's often better, you know, I will say, hey, you can code. I mean, sometimes it's tough because you're like, oh, I wish you hadn't done that. But I don't know. I'm not authoritarian. You know, I'm not in the camp of like, you know, locking people out of their own code and stuff like that.
Never. I always give them the master password if they want it. But, you know, they know when they're over their heads and they shouldn't be dabbling with the code. But yeah, you never want to lock people out. You want to have.
I wouldn't want to be locked out, so.
Yeah, exactly. I always give all my clients the master passwords.
The other thing that I do a lot of, because, you know, some of the things I'm going to do are going to take a while, and really it's going to be a waste of time for the client to watch me kind of like, you know, do this and that and do that. You know, I'll spend an hour setting something up, let's say. But what I'll do is I'll take screenshots along the way, and I think it's a really nice. It's easy. I'm there. I'm looking at a screen. I'll take a picture. Like, hey, I added this feature to this layout, and here's a picture, and here's where it is. And I'll do a screenshot, and I'll take, you know, I'll make an email as I go along, and then I'll send it to them. I say, I built this feature. Here's where it is. Here's how it works. You click here. Here's what happens. And depending on the client, I'll also send them pictures of the code. And, you know, this feature was, here's the button that you click. Here's the script that it runs. Here's the field that it touches. And here's the custom function that it calls. And it's all laid out in a little email. And that's it, you know.
Do they appreciate when you show them the programming code like that?
It depends. I mean, there's people where, like, I mean, the people that I do it for, generally, yes. Because I think every now and then you're going to get someone who's like, you know, don't send it to the user because they're not going to get it. But I don't know about you, but I have a lot of projects where I'm working with someone who's, you know, in-house talent.
Mm.
You know, the point person, the person who's going to, maybe they're going to be a FileMaker developer in their own right, or maybe they're going to be, you know, one of those people that bridges, meaning that they have domain knowledge as well as technical knowledge. I have a lot of people often over the years and currently who I work with who will, you know, they worked at the company, but they've got also that other side where they technical skills. So they'll talk to the users and they'll synthesize the help requests and they'll vet it and they'll say yes or no. And, or they'll say like, well, can you clarify? And then they'll get on the phone and they'll say, okay, here's what we need. It seems like we need this. And then you go back and forth with them and say, yeah. And then you'll decide how to implement. And, you know, they'll often care, but I think generally just to have that in the historical record of what was done is valuable.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. You know, Aaron does something that's really great. Aaron goes out of his way to make videos on all the new features that he adds. Not all the time, but a lot of times. And so Aaron will, you know, create not just screenshots, but full on videos and say, okay, you guys, I want you to see this. This is the new feature. When you click on this button, this happens and boom, 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 boom. And so it sort of acts as like a training and people can see it live in the video and they can replay it over and over again if they want. And it's really clever. I don't think I've seen anybody do that besides Aaron.
I love the power of video. You can send a video to someone and it can explain so much in just a few short minutes. And they always seem to appreciate it. I don't always have time to make videos. And of course, it takes a lot of space and takes time to upload.
Yeah. It's funny. Aaron's like, I love the power of video on our audio podcast.
They're definitely, I'd say, more labor intensive.
Yeah, definitely.
The quick and dirty words and pictures. Because a lot of, you know, what I've been doing a lot of these, you know, emails with picture and, you know, even sentence fragments. Because I figure my clients, you know, they don't want the great American novel. They want, you know, and I'll just type added field to layout here. You know. But I do think that that's very interesting. And is that for the camera guys or for... Because I bet they love movies.
You know, with the camera guys, they've got their – they do the screenshot. They actually do it themselves. I have one point person there, and I list all the new features to him, and sometimes I'll throw in a bunch of screenshots. And then he will then take my email, sometimes add a few more screenshots of his own, and he will then distribute an email to the entire staff that's a training email.
Nice.
With tons of screenshots. So he'll usually like double the number of screenshots. If I send him 5 screenshots, he'll go even deeper. So then nice. I started going deeper, and then he goes even deeper than that. So it's very funny, but he, yeah, so they do love the pictures also. I mean, it's very effective.
That's interesting. And there's a whole other topic there that, you know, that's a deep and wide topic, the whole idea of training and, you know, having a big user base. And I like that setup. You know, you've got a point person who's you know, on site,
mm-hmm.
and who can, you know, get face-to-face people. And, you know, I know you're there sometimes, but, you know, you're probably working remotely some. But having a point person at the client, to me, is almost like, for any big project that's moving fast, is pretty much required for success.
It's so important to have that point person. You get to, yeah, you're so right.
Because otherwise you got to, like, do mind reading, you know. Someone's got to be willing to invest, and it's an investment, it's time. Someone's got to be willing to invest the time to explain what they want. And, you know, the best I can do is be fast.
Yep.
But I need that. And I've actually had projects that have gone on hold, you know, like somebody leaves the company and, you know, you have to tell the owner, it's like, I'm not going to bill you anything because I can't get anything done without somebody telling me what needs to be done. And I understand you're busy doing that, but, you know, you just lost your project manager. So we got to get someone, you know, somebody on your staff has to take the time, but, you know, usually that happens, and then I'll do a lot of stuff, and I'll say, hey, you see all the good things that just happened? That's because Mary or, you know, Ellen or Bob, not the same Bob, because they made it happen. Because they did their job, plus they also got involved in how the business is run and made your business better. You should give them a bonus.
That's nice. That's very nice. Tony White is responsible for more bonuses being handed out than any other FileMaker developer that I know.
Yeah.
No, it's really true. Having a project manager when we work on projects is so critical to the success of a project. If the owner of the business is hands off and just lets all the employees just chip in their own thoughts on it, it sometimes can be too many cooks in the broth, or what do they say? Too many cooks, chefs in the kitchen. I think. I don't know my kitchen. I do not know my kitchen phrases.
I think it's too many cooks in the kitchen. I'm not sure where the broth comes in. There is something about broth.
Something about broth. You need bone broth. Bone broth's very healthy.
All right, so that was fun, you know, and this kind of wraps up our first podcast. We're going to edit, so if it sounds choppy, that's because it was. We did a little chop on this because, hey, it was our first podcast.
First podcast.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what I really liked? I really liked that, like, we sort of had, like, a loose topic, but we sort of covered a lot of different ground about FileMaker, which I like.
We did, and we laid down some areas for further conversation, further deep dives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did great. Congratulations. Yay!
So what
thank you for having me.
You know, we should talk more. So this was a great podcast.
It was a great podcast. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
I had a lot of fun.
Thank you guys. All right, now we've done this. Thanks. So we'll
right,
pick it
so
up
I'm going to stop recording.
And who else do we need to thank? We want to thank our listener. No, actually, we thank our listeners. we want to thank our listeners, plural.
Listeners. Both of you guys, both of our
and
listeners.
Gals, because you know, we're all about gender balance here.
Gender balance.
In
we
the
are
FileMaker
very,
community.
That's right. Both of our listeners, thank you.
Yeah.
No. Thank you to all of our listeners across the world.
Right, and then maybe one day we'll find some pithy music to splice in. But all right, off we go to post-production, and it's going to take a lot of work. But when we're all done, we're going to sound smart.
I love it.
All right.
Bye. Okay.
All right. Talk to you all soon.